It's time to listen to the interviews from Island Life on Saturday the 5th of May 2012. Island Life is our weekly magazine show focusing on Waiheke people, events and issues. It's brought to you every Saturday morning from 10 to 12 by the Humble Pie Village Butchery. You'll find them at 102 Ocean View Road, Oniroa. On Saturday the 5th of May, I talked to Poor Wai Ormsby about the Mayan calendar. I talked to Denise Roach, Green MP, and got the latest buzz from the Beehive. We were joined by the opinionated islanders Alan Knight and Alex Stone, and I spoke to community education business tutor Pete Russell. Summer solstice, the 21st of December 2012. Well, for many of us, that's the day where we dig up our garlic. For others, it's a day that's, I suppose, got a bit more portent. And certainly there are a lot of people, and fueled by some mega movies made in Hollywood, who believe that the 21st of December has particular significance under the Mayan calendar and could be a time of significant change, either catastrophic change or spiritual change. And here to talk to us about that is Poor Wai Ormsby, and we'll just make sure we get your mic on there. Yeah, good morning, Poor Wai. There we go. So, Poor Wai, tell us a little bit about what you're doing in the lead up to the 21st of December and how that came about.
Oh, kia ora. He honore, he karore, ki te atua, he mangaronga, ki te whenua, he whakaro pai ki ngā tangata katoa. Tēnā koutou te whānau whānui o te motu Arairoa, ko Puai tēnei. Through a coincidence of events, a lady was introduced to me on Waiheke Island, and she was a beautiful Chilean lady called, by the name of Andrea. She said that she had a message from the Mayan Council of Elders, and she was trying to find someone of the Māori Nation to hand this message on to. It came from the Mayan organisation from Guatemala, Mexico and Belize, participating in the 11th linguistic and cultural meetings of the Mayan peoples with the beliefs of our grandfathers and grandmothers. It was a call on the leaders of the original cultures throughout the world to synchronistically coordinate 36 ceremonies for the dawn of a new consciousness and the great celebration of the beginning of a new cycle on December the 22nd, 2012.
And, I mean, Chile is a long way from Guatemala, Mexico, where the Mayan people live. So how did this person from Chile become involved in all of this?
She has connections, and she has also spent a lot of time with this organisation, and has worked with some of the ceremonies. And so her coming to Waiheke Island, coincidentally, was because her beloved was here and been here now for 9 months. Mm. So she is the only messenger being sent to Aotearoa, and to be sent to Waiheke Island to me is very auspicious, as I sense that Waiheke Island has a common denominator of trailblazers from Greenpeace to our nuclear war grandmothers. So I feel that this is very auspicious for this community, where we come into unity, and this community walks with conscious awareness. So I feel that we were brilliant here to orchestrate this and to create the ceremonies, which we have been doing now.
So what did you know about, you know, these stories around the Mayan calendar, and I suppose a lot of the theories or around that particular day? What did you know about that before you met this woman?
I knew that it was a very exciting time for humanity. It was a time for us to make new beginnings, to live consciously with honouring Mother Earth and giving her our deep respect and honour that she deserves, as she is our mother, for us to have a shift in consciousness. Waiheke does that. There's very much a community that walk with conscious awareness in relationship to sustainability, permaculture. So I feel very, very excited about this message being brought here to Waiheke Island. And so from my heart, I will honour the message from the Mayan Council of Elders, and we will be holding, I call it, performance, where everyone can come into a circle. Every 20 days of this Mayan calendar, we will have that message going out now that you have allowed me to pass it on through the airways. Thank you very much. So today is also a celebration. It's a full moon as well. So I will be holding a performance at Little Palm Beach from about 5 to 6, where we will read the message to the people that gather if they so choose to.
So what's involved in a performance?
A performance is where you just come to a circle and you can give a song, you can read a poem, you can just give that time, being fully present in the power cord now, you give that love to Mother Earth. You just give thanks and blessings.
So this idea of a kind of a significant change. Now, some people believe that there's going to be some kind of catastrophic, you know, change, and I suppose, as I said in the introduction, that's been fueled by a lot of these big Hollywood movies where people see, you know, tidal waves and fires and volcanoes and earthquakes and all the rest of it. And then there's others who believe that that there's going to be some kind of spiritual change. There's a lot of kind of wacky theories around the state, aren't there? I mean, there's a lot of kind of things about kind of beams of consciousness from the other ends of the universe and a lot of that kind of stuff. So how do you define, out of when a date has all of these theories around it, how have you kind of found something for you which is seems, I suppose, significant and true within that?
It is a time of change where we as humankind come from our, instead of our minds now, we come into our hearts. It is a time where we need to listen to the children, our very wise ambassador, future ambassadors of the planet. It is a time where what we are doing that does not bring excitement into our worlds, and we call it work, should be shifted to passion. It is a time where you come fully present into your soul purpose, that you actually ask the questions, well, why am I here? I believe that if we are chosen at this time on the planet, you were born, therefore you were chosen. So I think for humanity, if we can start to realise that Mother Earth is our mother, she's here to nourish and sustain us, then we need to give that love and respect back to her. And with that consciousness, if we can get more people doing this and giving thanks and gratitude, then there's a critical mass consciousness that can help shift the paradigms of hatred into love.
So, Pua, you're Māori, and you've talked about this message that's come from Guatemala and Belize, from the Mayan People's Association. Does your connection with this date, does that derive from being Māori, or is it from other kind of spirituality or spiritual beliefs that you hold?
My life is full of mystery and magic. That's the way I work. That's the way it unfolds. 2 years ago, I was attending a gathering of the grandmothers of Pacifica that came to Aotearoa, and I was gifted a pendant which came from the La Koto grandmothers. The pendant is the symbol of the Mayan, Aztec, Peruvian cultures. So for 2 years, I've sort of like held that symbol, wondering what was going to unfold. And when the message was presented to me, I have an understanding now that I've chosen to put my hand up to bring this message. Also, this message has been sent to Aotearoa because we are the land of the first light. Therefore, we lead the way in the world as a global consciousness. So, to me, that's Aotearoa. We lead the way. Mm. So, let us lead the way in this as well.
I mean, this might be, a question not able to answer, I suppose, but not all of the people of Mayan descent are happy with the significance which is being attributed to this date. And I wonder if there's a sense where Indigenous people from all places around the world, whether it be Mayan or Māori or Inuit or whatever, are being attributed with a kind of I don't know, it's almost become this kind of spiritual novelty. I mean, in some ways, you know, is that area of Mexico and Guatemala kind of being overrun with Western New Agers who are going, oh, wow, isn't this amazing? And is there some kind of sense where, I mean, obviously, you know, you feel that there's a real significance to this date, but do you fear that there's some kind of, I suppose, kind of novelty or in kind of almost kind of patronising approach to Indigenous spiritual beliefs which is being placed around this event?
That's why the Mayan Council have given this message to be read to the peoples, to give them the understanding of their philosophy of this time, to stop all these other ways of believing that it is the end of the world. The message depicts that clearly. So for me to share that message to people at these performances will give them all clarity.
Yeah, and so, I mean, that message is quite lengthy, so we're not going to do that today, but yes, you are sharing that at the performances.
Yes.
Yeah, excellent. Now, you wanted to close with a piece?
Yes, thank you. I'd like to close with a prayer to our beautiful Mother Earth. Thank you very much. And this will be part of the performance of today. So, our Mother, whom art the Earth, hallowed be thy name. May we, your children, weave a web of love around you, and may love and light come forth now upon the face of earth, into her heart, into all of her kingdoms and all the reaches of her great body. Alter her vibrations from the depths of the great oceans to the tops of her great mountain ranges. Penetrate her fields, her flowers, her animals, her minerals and her plant kingdoms. Sweeten the air surrounding her body. I call for the gathering of love, uniting the above with the below on your surface to empower you and cleanse you. Anchor divine music for geometries into your chakras and infuse you with higher frequencies. Vivify your atmosphere, restore the sparkle to your waters, and lift remaining clouds of confusion and disharmony. I call for an immaculate conception of purity to wash over the five elements that work with you. May the directors of the elements of earth, fire, water, air, and the ethers be restored and bring resurrection and peace to the elementals working in your garden, your land, your oceans, and your air. Blessings of the solar presidents Helios and Vesta, who hold the entire solar system in their solar heart. You are our earthly home, and we, your children, gratefully share your blessings with you. Kia ora, kia tau, kia tātou, katoa, te ata whai o tō tātou ariki, a ihu karaiti mo te aroha o te atua, me te whiwhinga tahitanga ki te wairua tapu. Ake, 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 amini. Kia ora.
Thank you, Pūawai. It's Pūawai Ormsby, and her performance today is at what time again, Pūawai?
5 o'clock to 6.
5 to 6 at Little Oniroa.
Little
Palm Beach. All right, thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you.
Wakey Radio.
Okay, we're going to take. Luckily, we've got on the phone now Denise Roach for our MP, Green MP, resident here on Waiheke, and she's joining us from a caucus retreat in Nelson. How are you, Denise?
Oh, great, thank you, Chris. How are you?
I'm very good. So, what are you doing down there?
Basically, we're doing a bit of planning about what we all want to be doing with our portfolios over the next 2.5 years. And we've also got our families with us because MPs tend to get, because of the ridiculous hours and travel and stuff, we tend to get a bit dislocated. So it's an opportunity for us to sort of wider whānau, if you like. It's great.
So we got you on the line so we could catch up on the buzz in the beehive. Now, there must be a lot of people getting around kind of laughing behind their hands this week with all of this carry-on of John Banks and so on.
Well, some of us aren't putting our hands in front of our faces. We're just laughing, you know. It's just outrageous. The banks have been taking a lot of pot shots in the House, actually, with Trevor Mallard asking questions like, you know, because banks has got the responsibility around charter schools, and you have to ask questions that are specifically on the portfolio of the minister. So Trevor Mallard was asking him questions like, is it the Associate Minister's plan to develop a charter school in the car park of the Sky City Casino with funding from .com? You know, all kinds of ridiculous like that, which, ridiculous, like, ridiculousness.
So,
like that. So it's quite funny, but it's just, You know, it's a bit of a distraction from the real stuff of making law.
But you were thrown into the midst of it with your photo on the front page of the Herald there.
God. Yeah, the ugliest photo in the world. I really got a kid to bed earlier. Yeah, the 8 o'clock flight on Tuesday is chocker with politicians. But apparently there's some kind of law, well, not a law, but there's a sort of a memorandum of understanding that you're not supposed to put politicians of different parties seated together. So, you know, that was the first problem. The second problem was, you know, the listener... The listener photographer who we just happened to be getting on the plane and capturing the moment. They didn't know who I was. Well, John Banks knows who I am, you know, because the council and stuff. But the media, the listener guy, the photographer, didn't know who I was. So that's why I got I wasn't mentioned or was captioned in the article that appeared on the front page of the Herald. But yeah, it was quite funny to sort of sitting next to him. My body language, I think, in that photo kind of said it all, because he's not my most favourite politician.
So as you get around the precincts of Parliament, are you getting any sense from the kind of the national backbenchers that they are having a laugh at this whole thing as well, or that they've got any concerns about it? Or are they towing the key line?
Yeah, I think they're all following the key line. I was on Backbenchers TV show on Wednesday night with Maggie Barry. Wallace Chapman... directly questioned her about it. She just took the line, and that's very disciplined in that sense. The other parties are just sort of cracking up all over the place, really. And you know, from the Greens' perspective, we're supposed to we do have a code of conduct, so we're basically attempting to focus on the fact that actually it's really dodgy practice. We have a law, we have a bill. We're wanting to change the law around donations and disclosure for local body elections. It's in my name. So we're looking at what the problems are and how we can fix it. But at the same time, we're recognising that Banks and this dodgy dealings, and if he is arrested and charged, basically it's a fantastic political opportunity to try and change the way the government's going.
Yeah, and is that something that you... I mean, because these electoral things, I mean, often there's investigations and, you know, 9 times out of 10 or probably 99 times out of 100, they come to nothing. So is it something that people are thinking might actually have some weight this time?
Yeah. People do think there's more weight. Talking off the record with various journalists, they are also digging and finding more and more stuff that don't have credible answers. Whether he has broken the law or not, to some extent, is irrelevant to what happens with his reputation in Parliament. But he's still the guy who carries that one vote that gives the government its majority. So the pressure is on for the media and various, and particularly the Labor Party, to dig up actual breaches of the law, because it's got huge ramifications.
Now, just finally, because I know you need to get back, in a moment we're going to be talking to our opinionated Islanders, Alan Knight and Alex Stone, about the local board by-election. And one of the topics during the campaign, you know, amongst the chattering classes at least, was the influence you'd have of kind of, I suppose, giving the nod to Paul Walden. So what are your thoughts on the outcome?
Of course I endorsed Paul. I thought it was really, I'm really pleased with the result. The fun starts now, really, because the local board's 18 months into it. He is going to have a hard time he's going to have a hard time anyway, but it's important that there is a board member, at least one board member, who will challenge the status quo, and he's the person to do it. That's why I endorsed him. The process that occurred to choose him rather than Andy, that was actually a good process. Andy, in the end, after the last local body elections, we got it, Alan Knight can tell you, we got everybody together and said, we can't do this. We can't do this split the vote thing ever again. So a few of us tried to call those candidates together over Christmas, and I didn't put my resignation in from the board, not only because I wanted to make a tree, but also I didn't want to trigger a by-election over the summer when everybody's distracted by the tourist season. So that process of the decision about who would stand, that was actually, it was all right. And it was, you know, you guys decide on you, look at, decide on who it will be, look at who's on the board, look at what's missing and look at what's needed to fill it. And Andy's a great candidate, and I really hope he's going to run in the next elections in 18 months. But between them, we just left it up to them. And yeah, it's okay. I mean, I think we've got the right person to be a voice of challenge on the board. And yeah, more power to their arm.
Okay, and thanks very much for joining us, Denise, from your caucus retreat in Nelson. That's Denise Roche giving us the buzz from the Beehive. There we go, you're on Island Life here on Waiheke Radio, and it is the first Saturday of the month, and so I'm joined in the studio, and I've been looking forward to this because we've got to the end of the local board by-election now. So I'm joined in the studio by our opinionated Islanders, Alan Knight and Alex Stone. Good morning to you both.
Good morning.
How are you? Yeah,
now, Alan's got a grin, ear-to-ear grin. He's been looking forward to this.
Absolutely,
as well.
Absolutely, yes. We're sort of in the, what is it, election special studios here. We've got the swingometer and lots of interesting graphics. It's just a shame you can't see them because we're on the wireless.
So just before we launch into it, let's just I'm just going to give the results in case people haven't caught up with that.
That's right.
Okay.
Yes.
So the local
these
board,
are the final results.
Yes, the final results, right. Got these through at about 5:15 last night from whatever group it was that I got them from, the election people. So Maryanne Benson Cooper, 198. Alan Davies, 121. Graham Hooper, 137. Tracy Manser, 217. Sue McCann, 507. Herb Romaniuk, 457. And Paul Walden, 1,154. So a resounding win there for
resounding
Paul.
More than
double the next highest polls highest polling candidate. Yes.
However, there was also the disappointing 44.6% turnout.
Yes.
I was predicting a couple of days ago that we'd go over the 50 mark. I wasn't much more optimistic than that, but even I'd have to say I'm disappointed with 44%, I thought.
Yeah, maybe. But still, in the history of New Zealand local government politics, that's not bad for a postal by-election.
I guess it isn't. I just tend
it's
to...
usually down about 30, isn't it?
Yeah. You know, when these things are going on, I just tend to get wrapped up in them. I tend
you
to spend
the whole
a lot
world's
of time
interested.
Talking with people who are likewise fascinated by the whole process. And you sort of forget that... outside, there are plenty of people going about their day-to-day things. I haven't even heard there was a by-election on.
That's right.
So, yeah, I suppose in that sense, 44% is not too bad.
What amazed me about the results is there were some, doozy candidates, and I expected them to get like one or two votes each, and they got 120. I thought that was pretty good going.
Yeah. Well, once again, Alan Davies, a fantastic, resounding result for him, 121 votes. I don't know what's wrong with this community. You know, time and again, this man selflessly puts himself forward to work tirelessly on our behalfs. And this community spurns him. Spurns him, I say, with a pathetic turnout like that.
Yeah.
Graham Hooper, of course, in second to last place.
Oh, okay, second to last, yeah.
Right. Yeah, he managed 137. Now, of course, Graham Hooper, blighted from quite early on by his quite spectacular meltdown on Facebook. Of course, anyone who wasn't following all this on Facebook, the debate sort of broke out on the Waiheke Community Facebook page, and the whole debate got so frisky that eventually it was decided that the debate needed to be split off onto a different page. So if you want to look it up, if you want to go back through any of this, it's all up there. If you're on Facebook, just look for Waiheke People's Parliament.
Is this the big debate about the... Walden's bill at the hardware store?
Absolutely, yes, yes. And
I think our poor old Hooper might have got the wrong end of the stick, because Walden's a builder, so he does have an account at the hardware store. He does have to pay a few $1,000 for timber. You know, it's not the end of the world.
Yeah. I mean, it's the sort of thing that had there been a public meeting, which of course there wasn't, and if Graham Hooper had chosen to drop that particular bombshell at a public meeting, that would have been quite interesting. But the way he did it online was careless, and it really upset quite a lot of people. Yeah. Really set the whole debate going.
Yeah. But I didn't see it as a sort of, I didn't see substance to it. You know,
no,
a guy who's a
not.
Builder must have an account outstanding at the hardware, at the timber suppliers. You know,
yeah.
It's just like what happens. it's hardly a great. Example of corruption at its worst.
No.
So, I mean, obviously, Paul had, you know, a reasonably public campaign with his billboards and newspapers, and Graham kind of jumped up and down and, you know, and drew attention to, well, he didn't really draw attention to his views, did he? He drew his attention to what he thought of one of the other candidates.
Yeah.
But then again,
if you know, listening to his interview with you on the radio, it was clear he didn't really have much in the way of ideas of his own. His interview was really quite painful to listen to.
I thought Paul's campaign was quite flash, you know, the colour billboards and stuff. He spent a few bucks in that. I was wondering if this was his big shot, his last shot, you know. Does his family allow for him to keep spending this kind of money? There was a lot of money spent on those billboards.
Well, I imagine he's hoping that incumbency is going to help him when we come to the next election in 18 months' time.
Yeah.
But the point I was getting to there was the other candidates, fairly invisible.
Yes.
Yes, yeah.
Because everyone else ran the standard campaign where you just put a couple of ads in the papers.
A couple of smalls.
Where, you know, you just say, oh, you know, I've been on the island for X number of years,
enough,
passionate
yeah.
about this community, how about it?
We could invent a whole new way of defining these little campaigns. We could call them the Smalls campaign, you know, with that nice connection to underwear. You know, you just put in a couple of tiny classifieds in the Gulf News, and that's good enough.
And it was the first time I can think of for a while that we've had an absentee candidate.
Yes.
Yeah, that's interesting.
Who actually managed to, what is it, third place?
Yeah.
No, sorry, no. Third from the bottom.
Yeah,
I couldn't
Anne-Marie
figure out,
Benson Cooper.
I couldn't figure out what to... there's no way I could figure out why I needed to vote for this person.
No.
Can anyone tell me?
Not really. Well, she likes dogs.
And she lives in Milford.
Yeah.
On the North Shore.
Fantastic.
Oh,
what an asset she'd be. Not.
Well, she likes dogs, fair enough. That's all good.
Still, yeah. She must have had something going for her because she beat both Alan Davies and Graham Hooper.
Yeah. Well, the funny thing about this campaign, it didn't have as much humour as I thought it was going to have. You know, we had this little drama. And for me, it was mostly a anything but Herb campaign. So, you know, it came right in that way.
I never felt that Herb was in any way a contender this time around.
Yeah.
Now, he took third place, of course. And I think the encouraging vote, however, was for Sue McCann. I was really hoping that she would get enough of a vote to encourage her to keep going, because I think she's probably got a lot to offer down the track. And as a first-time candidate, you know, coming in second place, that's not bad.
That's a lot of work, you know. Maybe she'll Paul's tried a few times, so maybe Sue's got to keep trying.
Yeah, and I mean, Sue did that on no campaign. I mean, Herb was handing out flyers. I haven't seen anything from Sue.
Yeah, but I mean, I think her profile locally is sufficient that you know, enough people would think, well, actually, yeah, she wouldn't be too bad on the board.
But now we must move on to how Paul fits into the existing it seems to be like a kind of cozy arrangement that the existing
well,
board
yes.
has. Paul, Paul will shake it up a bit, eh?
I do hope so. I noticed, 2 weeks ago, the Marketplace, which of course is the in-house newspaper for the current board, wrote this droolingly approving article on how the board are getting on. You know, there's the skate park and things like that. So, missed a lot of the things that I think a lot of us are worried about, like, for example, this appalling development over at Oni Tangi.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Where was the talk of that?
Mm.
Did the board have anything to say on the shocking dog fee hike?
Well,
they've been really quiet
on
a lot
of
issues, which I think a lot of us are quite interested in. Mm. But then this has always been the perception, right from the word go, that Faye Storer would lead a board whose job was to sell Auckland City to us,
yeah.
Not fight our corner against Auckland City, which I think a lot of us would like to see. Mm. So, Paul, if you're listening, I think that's got to be your approach.
Yeah, I like also the...
Don't worry about making a noise and a mess. Yeah. I think a lot of us want to see this shaken up.
And I think Paul's environmental credentials are good. He's a... he's very active in the forest and bird and for marine protection and stuff like that. So I think he'll do more in that area than the current guys are doing. So good on him. Yeah.
Yeah, there are some answers which we're not getting at the moment, I feel, on a number of issues. And all we get from the local board is sort of pictures of them opening skate parks and stuff. It's like, yes, skate parks are lovely, but I think we've got more pressing matters.
But I've found the wider politics has been a lot more amusing this past week, you know. For me, it's been a bit of a sad thing. I've been feeling for those fellas who've been trying to run a comedy festival. Have they been comprehensively upstaged by old Banksy?
Yes. Well, yes. Moving on to matters of
apparently last night there was a late night session at the comedy festival. The poor guy was stand up alone on the stage, and there wasn't a single person in the audience. He didn't even have a heckler. Not one.
Not one.
They were all sated.
All at home watching Banks on the late news.
Yes.
Wasn't it been great?
Well, I was saying earlier that, you know, if Kim.com turns out to be the guy who brings down John Banks once and for all,
it'd be lovely.
It would be great. I think he should be immediately offered New Zealand citizenship and basically made mayor of Auckland.
He's the ultimate tall poppy. Let's say he's the big poppy.
He is.
He's the larger-than-life celebrity villain we've always wanted. He's the Bond villain with the blue sunglasses and the trophy bride and the 1,000 girls and the helicopter and the blow-up tank. He's got colour.
There was that great tweet which was reported in the Herald.
I
think everyone's heard that now. It's like, I don't recall the helicopter ride to the mansion with the overweight Bond villain who gave me $50,000.
Yes. No, I don't remember that, but no, sure.
This is really turning out to be quite funny. But I really wish, because, I mean, it's... I thought the best bit, of course, was the sheer nerve of Winston Peters going on about, this is hypocritical stuff. It's like... Mr. Peters, does the name Owen Glenn mean anything to you? No, absolutely not. Never heard of the guy.
But in the end,
that was years ago.
But Peters did allow that, you know, I got fired for this kind of stuff, so he should get fired too.
Yeah.
Peters did say that.
Yeah, but it took Helen Clark an awfully long time to cut him loose. And I really think John Key should just get on with it and cut Banks loose. Yeah. I mean, what's he worrying about? If it forces a by-election in Epsom, National are going to win it. It's not like Labour are going to suddenly come from nowhere and take Epsom off them.
Unless Kim.com stands, the good folk of Epsom might vote for him.
Well, that would be great. I think Kim.com should simply become Auckland mayor.
I love the rich irony of these smug folk in Epsom with their achievement-oriented families and their renovated villas and shiny 4x4s and their top-scoring kids at private schools and Grammar Zone and stuff. They have made the two silliest election decisions in New Zealand's history. They took on Hyde and then they took on Banks. A bunch of fools.
Well, I don't know about Rodney Hyde. I had a lot of time for Rodney Hyde. Yeah, I thought he was a good man. I was very sorry to see him go.
I think we can just respond to that with glorious, gleeful laughter.
Yeah, exactly, yes.
Good old Rodney.
Rodney Hyde, bless his little bald head.
It was all a plan to get out of politics. He wanted to get out in a blaze of glory, so he took his girlfriend on a ride to London.
But
perk buster.
Do
you see, he's now a columnist for the Sunday.
He is, yes.
And with a special brief to sniff out perk busting.
Yes, excellent.
Love it.
How wonderfully shameless.
Talking about the Sunday papers, I think there's a real big issue we should consider. Did you hear about a local council in Poverty Bay are worried about the PR implications of Poverty Bay? They think it's not good. They want to revert to the original Maori name, which is Onaroa.
Now, no kidding.
Yeah.
I've not heard that.
Now, here's the thing. That's our name. But I thought about it. Maybe we could swap. If we became Poverty Bay, that might be the disinformation campaign we've been looking at all along to discourage the millionaires.
Exactly.
So
yes. There is a local precedent for this.
Yeah, let's try
it. Down in Blackpool. Back in the days when Faye Storer was last heading the community board, there's a little reserve down there which is called Wairoa Reserve.
In Blackpool. Oh, yeah, the little swamp. Yeah,
it used to be
called Mosquito Basin.
Yeah.
and the you know, people selling their houses in Blackpool said, we don't like this because it sounds like it's a little basin full of mosquitoes, which it is.
Yeah.
You know, let's change the name so that no one knows what it is. And so it's, yeah, local precedent. And so it's funny that in Poverty Bay, the name they would take up is one that's from here.
Yeah.
Yeah. But a straight swap would be quite an interesting thing, because it would have a nice sort of ironic tone about it.
It would be very ironic if you called Oniroa Poverty Bay.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. So I think this is something we should consider.
No boats worth more than $5 million allowed any longer or something. No, yeah.
Or only those worth $5 million and above in Poverty Bay, inverted commas. Yeah, that's a good one. Yeah. So what else has been happening?
Well, I don't know. I've just been watching the election.
Mm.
I mean, we've had all this beautiful weather and everything, and I'm indoors just following what people are talking about and not even getting out and getting in the sunshine. I'm glad it's all over, really.
So now that the local board by-election's over, we're back to the rather more mundane process of local board meetings and carry on. Really.
Well, good luck to Paul Walden sitting through any of those. I tried to sit through the first one, and I don't know how. I suppose the one thing you need as a successful board member is the ability to go to sleep with your eyes open.
Mm.
Because the amount of tedious process and paperwork that you sit and have to listen to at meetings, it's intolerable.
But you've said this before. The fun part is not that part.
No, it's not. The fun part is the politics.
Yeah.
Once the politics are over and the results in, it becomes government, and government is dull.
Yeah, so we just got to stick with the showbiz of politics. But all of this is good, because we need New Zealand's politics to be a bit more lively than it has been, I think.
Well, now, as the other thing, of course, is that we're now looking 18 months or so down the track, we'll be looking at another local board election.
Yeah.
And I think Denise answered that very well just now, because there was a little bit of talk about... Was the process really fair, and was Andy Spence's sidelining really something that we should feel comfortable about? There was talk, I know, because it was me saying it. What was going on here? I just saw, because they wouldn't let me into the meeting just to have a listen. But I think they've managed to answer that, and I think really the best candidate has won. Andy Spence is probably best kept in reserve, along with Sue McCann, so that next time round we might have a local board who might actually be a little more local.
I've got an idea for the next local board election. Why don't we go for a world record for green candidates? We could go for, there were 15 last time, sort of left-leaning, greenish-type, locally-oriented candidates. So next year, why don't we go for 1,000 of them?
No.
Then we'll have all the intrigue that you love so much.
I think never mind left or right. I mean, this has always been the problem for the last 18 months.
Good point.
We've suddenly found ourselves pushed into this strange new world of factionalised local politics, which never used to exist. Everybody ran as an independent.
We didn't
have any perceivable power blocks. Yeah. Now we do, and we've got to get used to it. But I would way rather see at the next election, the incumbents will stand on one side, and on the other side, it won't really be about left or right. It'll be about how many smart, stroppy buggers we can put up to displace them and get stroppy with Auckland City.
Yeah, well, then let's...
Take the fight to them.
I'll amend my proposal. Let's go for a world record in smart, stroppy buggers.
Smart, stroppy buggers. Those are who we need.
With no gender-specific...
Just the ability to stand up and take the fight to Auckland City, rather than having to, as we've had over the last 18 months, of really having a board who take the view that, look, if you want to get anything out of these people, you've got to work with them. I can see Facedora's point here.
But it's not nearly as much fun as being...
Not nearly as much fun as saying no. In fact, this we're not going to work
with
you.
The tradition of Waiheke, it's been our national sport for aeons, for generations. The national sport is to put your fingers up to the Auckland City and, you know...
Totally.
Yeah. Let's stick with our traditions.
And if there is one thing that should really inspire us as we move towards this sort of state of stroppiness, it's look what happened over the dog registration fees.
Yeah, that worked.
What a back down.
Yeah.
Yes.
Well, that worked.
Yes, tip of the hat to Councillor Cathy Casey there. She really came through.
I was all prepared to go and speak at that run, because I feel the problem is cats. If they want to raise money, that it's cats. 100% of cats actually break the rules by going outside of their properties every night.
Yes.
Yeah.
I did notice the other day that the local SPCA was running an ad saying we've got some rats that are needing homes.
Oh, good Lord.
Which I thought was very unusual.
Yeah, yeah, I've got some. I've been catching rats lately, and these particular rats seem to feed on the fallout from the dog bowl, and the dogs get this fancy Purina stuff. I want to tell you, it works for rats too. I've never seen such sleek and well-conditioned rats. The ones that eat the little scraps of Purina. I can show you what a Purina rat looks like. It's pretty good looking.
Yep, the rats on this island are pretty impressive. Yeah. The ones my cat leaves outside quite impressive.
Talking about stroppy buggers.
We've gone down this path of rats before, and it ended up with you suggesting a rat skinning and fur
industry. That's right, yes.
But I think Waiheke needs a rat man, like a superhero. Rat man, who are you going to call? Why don't we put a job advert on the radio for... Waiheke needs a superhero. We need to be saved by Ratman.
Maybe we could elect a Pied Piper. I wonder who would stand.
Oh, it could be a candidate in the next local board election. Stand to eradicate rats. You'd get a few votes.
Yes, because rats themselves can't vote, so yeah.
How many votes would that person get?
Mind you, the rat eradication problem on the island has been pretty good. The proof of that is if you drive out the back end, look how many pheasants there are around.
Yeah.
Back when I first came to the island, you saw maybe one or two.
Yeah.
Nowadays, they're all over the place. Why? Because the rats aren't there anymore and they're not eating the eggs.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, good.
So, all right. Pheasants, rats, local board candidates.
And John Banks.
Done.
Yes.
and Poverty Bay. We've got to keep a watching brief on our new name.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, so it's the Opinionated Islanders, Alan Knight and Alex Stone.
So let's just say a resounding well done to Paul Walden. Yeah, and good, if you're listening, you, Paul, get out there and kick some asses.
Give him heaps, yeah.
Yeah, give them heaps.
Give them one from us.
Okay, and they'll be back on the first Saturday of next month here on Island Life on Waiheke Radio.
You're listening to Waiheke Radio, 88.3 and 107.4 FM.
Waiheke Community Education have, every term really, they have, every school term, they offer a really diverse program of courses, and that's no different this term. They've got a range of courses starting up over the next week or so, including courses on social media, cooking courses with Sarah Latouche, One Pot Wonders. They've got their woodwork course, flax weaving, digital photography. There's just a whole range of courses there, and you can check that out on Waiheke.com.nz. That's COMED.co.nz. And one of the courses being offered is a Start Up Your Business course with Pete Russell. And Pete's here in the studio with me. Good morning, Pete.
Good morning, Chris.
So, Pete, people may know of you as the Ubi guy, you know, growing organic vegetables in our backyards.
That's right.
That's right. So people might look at that and go, okay, you know, organic vegetables, gardening, bit of a hippie. What's he know about starting up a business?
Right, yeah, well, good question. Well, Ubi is a startup business, and the difference between Ubi and about the 14 previous businesses I've started up is that Ubi is a social enterprise, whereas the previous businesses have all been just private enterprises that I've started. So it's the same principles, though. You've got to be able to make a business work, and you've got to understand the basics that underlie getting an idea and actually getting it to take traction and get to a point where it's a profitable in terms of it can sustain itself.
So if you've done it 14 times,
yep.
you know, going back to your point about getting it to work, 14 times, they obviously didn't all work.
No.
You've learned from your mistakes.
Exactly. The last five times. In fact, well, Ubi's number 15, and the last five have worked. And so there's a lot that can be learned by not working.
Yep.
Which, you know, I've noticed over the years that when you learn a lesson by making mistakes, you really learn the lesson. I haven't repeated those same mistakes. So I'd like to be able to share those tips with people.
And so those ideas, I suppose, of self-sustainability that you've advocated through Ubi, do those same ideas flow through into starting up a business?
Well, I think they're the same. I mean, with a business, you've got to have some basic fundamentals handled. the philosophy behind self-sustainability or community sustainability, in order to be able to perpetuate that, you have to have the business basics handled. Otherwise, it's a great idea. It's, you know, that everyone can agree with, or that a lot of people can agree with, but it kind of can be a bit of a flush, and then it breaks down and can't really sustain itself. So I think the first thing, underpinning, you've got to have the right business fundamentals handled, and then you can take a philosophy or an ideology like what we're doing with Ubi and perpetuate that forward.
And so, I mean, with something, let's talk about Ubi for a moment. So this is an idea, you know, that started off as, suppose, you know, encouraging people to grow their own food, but you've managed to turn this into a business model. Is that going to be a goer, do you think? Do you think there's a long life ahead for that? For that business?
Yeah, it is a goer. It's a sustainable business now. We are earning more money than we're spending, which is what it's all about. You've got to bring in more than it's going out, and that way you can sustain yourself. We started Ubi here on the island 3.5 years ago as a social network for food growers, and now we've evolved that into also being a distribution network for local food. So that means that the people who have joined Ubi because they are growing food in their backyards or because they might have a small holding, we can connect those people with each other so they can talk to each other. And now we can also purchase food from them and distribute that to local households, both here on Waiheke and also in Auckland.
Yeah, and I think that probably would surprise some people, wouldn't it? That's something that they might think is kind of a bit of a fringe interest, that you can actually pick that up and run a sustainable business from it.
Yeah, as long as you use the right business practices. I think this is a really big challenge. You know, there is a lot of organisations out there at the moment around the world that are working on this task of taking localized micro food products and, you know, growers and suppliers, and trying to turn that into a sustainable business. But it's not an easy trick to do. It's actually quite difficult. My past has been in supply chain logistics with food, and throughout all the other types of enterprises, I've been able to really bring some disciplines in there that we have been able to crack it. We have been able to make it work with very low cost. It's a very lean startup. You know, we run from a small shipping container, and you know, that those business fundamentals are what has made it possible for us.
So you've talked about the 14 businesses before, and you know, the last five were successful. So what kind of areas were they in? Were they all in food as well?
Not all of them in food. No, the last three have been in food. Prior to that, well, body care, children's books publishing, animation. I've jumped across lots of different industries, and food has been where my attention's been in the last, now it's close to 10 years. Hairdressing salon was one, you know, we've done a lot of different things. But food, I guess, is where it comes back down to the basics of, if we can manage our food systems and we can do it at a community level, we can make a huge difference. So that's why I'm in the food game.
And the Ubi business, I mean, so that's sustaining itself. And is that, you're able to do that from Waiheke?
I work one day a week, sometimes one day a fortnight, I'll go into town to meet with the crew, where we have our get-together and we look at how things are going and look at ways we can improve. But generally, I work from my home out of Awaroa. It's all online. I'm only actually working 24 hours a week at the moment, and we're able to make it work.
Yep. So what kind of things are you going to, you've talked a bit about these fundamentals. So what are some of those fundamentals that you're going to run through in your course?
Right. Okay. Well, first one is evaluating your idea. That's one thing that I've had a lot of experience with, is coming up with really what I thought are wonderful ideas and really exciting, only to realize actually the market's not ready for that, or the market's not big enough for that, or I don't know how to reach the people that idea will really inspire.
Yeah. So there's my idea of having a record shop selling pies and pints of beer as well is not going to run on Waiheke.
Oh. Well, I don't know, actually. I think the challenge with business here on Waiheke is a population. You know, you might have a niche in the market that really like what you're doing, but there's just not that many people that can sustain a business.
Yeah, so that's part of the evaluation process,
definitely,
isn't it? Yeah,
definitely. And I mean, you know, starting a business here on Waiheke doesn't mean that Waiheke is your only audience too. So it depends on your idea as to whether it will work here on the island. Mm-hmm. The other one is defining your business model. There's a big part of taking an idea, but then figuring out what the right model is. And business model means what's your revenue model, what's your distribution model. And so defining a business model is. Then we have identifying your needed resources. You come up with an idea, but you don't necessarily know straight up what you're actually going to need to make it happen. Pitching for support. You never do. Business is nothing. You don't do business on your own. You might be the owner of the business, but you've got to have support. It's business is about people. And so pitching for support and finding the right people to support you. Reaching your first customers, critical. Setting up systems. Yep. At first, you are the systems. But if you're going to make this thing sustain itself, you've got to set systems up so you can remove yourself from being a cog in the wheel so that you can actually help to grow that business and that it can be provide you a lifestyle and a livelihood and then managing cash flow.
Yep. And I suppose part of this process as well, isn't it, as you're working through these ideas with people is that people may realise that their idea isn't a goer. And but if they do that, they're better off rather than launching into it and throwing a whole lot of capital into it and then going, oops.
True. And I think you've got to test your idea too. It's no good at having an idea and then, you know, you've got to put it up against the rigor of critical analysis, you know, and if it gets through that, then you go for it. And then you might not succeed anyway, but that doesn't mean you haven't made progress. You know, I had 10 businesses that I was able to keep going for, you know, 2 and 3 years, but I wasn't able to, in those early days, I wasn't able to get it to sustain itself. But I'm very glad that I did it. I'm so glad that I was able to, you know, have that experience because those lessons are invaluable.
Do you think that passion is important? I mean, I recall years ago, a guy I met, this was in the States, and he was from Ireland, and he was going home, and he said, when I get back, I'm going to start up a business. And he said, I'm going to sell automatic garage door openers. He said, no one in Ireland has got an automatic door opener for the garage. Now, he didn't drive a car. He couldn't care less about automatic garage door openers. But his passion was that he wanted to run business. It wasn't what the business was. Now, with something like, say, Ubi, I get a sense it's this the other way around, that you started off from a passion for sustainable food, and that's what drove the business idea. What's the mix there? I mean, can someone successfully run a business, be enthusiastic about it, and grow it about something that they don't give a damn about?
Some people can, definitely. And I know people who can just sell widgets for the sake of selling widgets. So that's what really, you know, lights their fire. So you've got to figure out what sort of person you are. For me, it's passion. For me, it's a love affair. It's an idea and it's falling in love with an idea and falling in love with a vision and then being of service to the vision. You know, that's how it works for me, right? And I know that also for a lot of entrepreneurs, that is the experience. It's They get that idea that flies in one night and settles in their head, and that's it. They're done for. If they don't serve that idea, they've got nothing else that they can think of doing.
Yeah, and so you've got the details of dates and times and that carry on?
It's so 7 p.m. to 9 p.m. on Tuesday afternoons, starting next Tuesday, as in the 15th, mm-hmm. I believe, and it goes for 6 weeks. And we have, I think we've got two more spaces to be filled. And what we're going to do is start by listening to you. If you come along and do this first session, we're going to sit and listen and understand who's in the room and really what you want to achieve with your startup. And then we will design the course around that because, you know, you can't cover everything in 6 2-hour sessions. So we're gonna design it around that and bring in a lot of, you know, stories and ideas that I've been able to do in the past, and also learn from each other.
Great. Okay, so Pete Russell, running a Start Your Own Business course, and that's at Waiheke Community Education. Check them out online, waihekecomed.co.nz, or call them on 372-6417. Thanks, Peter.
Thank you, Chris.
You've been listening to the interviews from Island Life, a weekly look at Waiheke people, events and issues, every Saturday morning from 10 till 12, with interviews repeated on Wednesdays at 7 p.m. and Thursdays at 12:30 p.m. Island Life is brought to you by The Village Butchery, the place to go for great cuts of meat and friendly service. You'll find them at 102 Ocean View Road, Onirua.